The following Life Matters talkback was recorded earlier. If you'd like to contribute to the discussion, please send your emails or voice memos to lifematters@abc.net.au. Look forward to hearing from you. That's lifematters@abc.net.au.
Does talking about money kill the romance when you're getting to know a new partner? Our guests today say it could be the make or break issue for many relationships, and that even the first date isn't too early to bring it up. Really? Luckily, they have some tips for how to do it in a way that won't sour the mood. I'm wondering if money has caused conflict in your relationship. If so, what did you do about it? And if it hasn't caused conflict, what's your secret? With us today are Matt Garrett, who's a couples and families therapist and the manager of the Hunter Region Office of Relationships Australia, and Catherine Robson, who's a personal finance expert. Welcome to you both.
Hi, how are you going, Hilary?
Now, you each have more than 20 years' experience talking to couples about money. That's very impressive. Let's start with you, Matt. We don't generally think of money as a very sexy topic for a first date. Is there a way to bring it up that's still romantic?
I'm not sure about bringing it up, but certainly thinking about money and what it means to you. I guess the anecdote is that if you're quite independent and you want to maintain your own finances, and chivalry raises its head in terms of your partner wanting to pay for everything and that doesn't sit well with you, my sense is that that's the time that you should start making conversations, because I think you should try and go forward in a relationship. You should start how you hope to go forward.
And is that going to be a confrontational moment, though? Is it going to be something you're going to need to smooth out as the evening progresses?
I guess it depends on how you put it forward. If you do it gently and with tact and empathy, it certainly lets your partner and maybe a long-term commitment relationship know exactly where you stand on this sort of thing. It actually possibly saves problems emerging later on.
And you were talking before about the idea of chivalry. It sounds like it's not just about money. There's something else going on there. What's really happening when couples disagree about money?
A whole lot of factors can come into play, including values, family of origin influences, a whole range of issues. And, of course, money more than often represents those very important issues, which are very symbolic of an intimate relationship or a couple heading that way.
When your values are such a big part of your identity, aren't they? I guess you'd want them to line up with your partner's values. Does it happen most of the time or not in your experience?
Well, we understand that in the main, couples don't talk about these things until it becomes an issue or a problem, or until problems emerge. So, yeah, unfortunately not. And so probably the first bit of advice is to start having these conversations as soon as you can.
Catherine Robson, you're a financial expert, not a relationships therapist, but you do a values exercise with your clients when they come to you together. What does that involve?
So we use a stack of cards that have a whole range of different values that are personal in nature. They don't necessarily relate to money. But what we ask couples to do firstly is to come as a couple for the first consultation so that you're both engaged in the process. And then we'll give you a stack of cards each and ask each of you to go through the 50 cards and pull out the five that most describe you, most resonate with you. And then we try and get a sense of whether they align, but also how those values link to money, and paint a picture of what sort of financial resource you might need jointly to make the sort of life you want a reality.
And what's on those cards? What kind of things are people choosing?
Almost anything you could think of. So things like education, integrity, security, wealth, honesty, excitement, autonomy. So a whole range of different things. And the beautiful thing about it is that there's no right or wrong answer. The second thing we really like about it is everyone's an expert in their own values. And so often what happens in a couple is that one person will take a leadership role when it comes to managing money. And so you can often find, even if a couple comes to a consultation together, one of them will be looking out the window feeling either insecure, ashamed that they're not more familiar with their own personal finances or defensive. So if you start with an exercise where both are on an even plane, you get a much better then foundation to build the rest of the discussion about the financial issues in that couple's life.
And how often are people surprised by the cards that their partner picks?
Most often people find a good overlap between them. Most often you find people who, especially if they've been married for quite a long time, will say, oh, I knew you'd pick that one, which is great. And it doesn't necessarily mean that you have to have the same cards or that it's a bad sign that your values are slightly different. But what we really want to do is make that conversation explicit, and so that there's not assumptions that you carry that are very alien to your partner and then cause tension down the track.
And Matt, I'd like to ask you from your perspective as a relationships therapist, how often are partners surprised at the difference between their values or their attitudes to money?
I think, well, it depends on how long the couple have been together, of course. And it often takes an issue like, say, struggling around money for those differences to come to the fore. And there we do have some very interesting conversations. Or we have often some trite conversations where one of the partner might say, well, that would make sense when you think about your family, for example. Or, so it really depends on the context, I think.
And can couples still get along if they discover that their financial values are really different?
Of course they can, and it's very few, at least in my experience, where couples are actually toe-to-toe on these sorts of issues. So there are going to be differences. What the secret is really how they negotiate those and make allowances for them in their relationship, and that's often very hard work.
That is very comforting, though, that there is hope. Edlin says on Facebook, it's simple, really. I do all the finance legwork. My husband keeps $200 for himself and sends the rest to me for distribution. It's working very well thus far. I would love to know how long thus far was. Perhaps, Edlin, you could update us. And Andrew's called in from Melbourne. Andrew, hello to you.
Hi there.
You had a particular strategy when you went overseas. Tell us about that.
Well, yes, I've been in a relationship with a woman for about 5 months, and we decided to go overseas for a couple of weeks, and at that stage in a relationship you don't know the other person really well. So what we decided to do was, because when you're overseas, you'll know this, you're sort of spending money all the time on incidentals and food, etc., and big things and small things, and if one person's paying all the time, then that can become a bit unfair. So what we did was we just sort of formed a kitty whereby we each contributed a certain amount of money at the start, quite a bit, and then put that into an account and just had one card, and we just used that one card all the time, and so it wasn't as if we were sort of taking it in turns or, you pay for this and I'll pay for that. It just took all those sort of problems out of it whereby we were just sort of spending this sort of pooled amount. And worked really well. So we decided to do that when back in Australia as well. So, that's what we did.
So, Andrew, you don't live together, but it sounds like a really good trust-building exercise that you've come up with.
It is. And from my point of view, it's really good because it was my partner, the woman, that actually suggested it. So, that reinforces that sense of fairness and trust, if you like.
Indeed. Andrew, thanks for that.
Okay.
Matt, tell us about some of those milestones where conflict over money sometimes erupts.
Probably the classic is when a couple first begin to form their relationship, and of course buying their first home, if that's the case, and starting a family. And because both of those things are very resource intensive and draw on the finances, in the clinic room, that's often where we see money appear in the conversation. I do have to say, though, that it's often more around other things like trust, intimacy, closeness, shared values that, if you like, wrap around the money issue. It then becomes the symptom. Can I just comment on that previous caller's? I think that's very interesting, just from the point of view that it was the woman who initiated the the idea that they had. And of course, this is something that we're experiencing more and more as women are often earning as much, sometimes if not as more than their male partners at least. And so really the playing field is very, very different to what it was a couple of generations ago, where the male was the principal breadwinner. So they came to a great conclusion, which I think is what it's all about. And interestingly, they had the conversation just 5 months in, but it was actually the travel that brought it to up. So it's the issue that brings up the money, if it's a problem, rather than money being the problem necessarily to begin with.
There are those moments too, though, when perhaps you start a family and suddenly gender roles that you thought were pretty sweet can revert back to a much more traditional setup because one of you's not earning. What happens then, Matt?
Well, unless the couple are very in tune with one another, we can find women not only being the caregiver but also taking on the household tasks. And, you know, the male might be feeling quite aggrieved about that, but the male might also be feeling quite aggrieved that they're out there earning and maybe not feeling appreciated. But again, here I think the issue is more between what's happening with the couple intimately, if you like, or a lack of intimacy is more the point, especially once children come along, that then fires off into these other realms like finances and et cetera. It's really around appreciation. And so again, we see that money perhaps is more the symptom rather than the cause necessarily.
We've got a text message. My husband is an accountant, says RF. So it naturally fell to him to manage our finances from the time we were married. And I let him do it. He's never let our finances fall into disarray. And I thoroughly trust his judgment. However, it also means that I don't understand anything about our finances. We're now at a stage in life where I sometimes wonder who will outlast the other. And if I outlast him, I have absolutely no idea about how to manage our finances. This is something that worries me quite a lot. And I can see you, Catherine, nodding your head. Is that something that people come to you to ask about?
Yeah, absolutely. So that feeling of vulnerability, particularly for women. So statistically, over their lifetime, women still earn less than men. They often spend more of their discretionary income on others, so their children, and then they statistically live longer than men. So what often happens is that, as you say, when you're a young couple without dependents, both of you are sustaining your own individual finances. That often gets merged as you have a family. And there's obviously in a couple the need to just try and divide and conquer. So, you know, you're not doubling up on things, but where you have one member of the relationship taking that leadership role, if the other's not engaged, you can find yourself in a very difficult and stressful situation if that person passes away.
David's called in from Northern New South Wales. And David, you've turned to technology.
Yes. Yes, I had certainly issues when I was married many decades ago with finances, and my partner and I have been living together for quite some time, but we operate sort of separate financial situations, and we've tried the kitty concept when we've gone overseas very successfully. But about six months or so ago, my partner suggested we use technology, you know, use an app, and there are various apps on the Play Stores, etc., that you can do to share expenses, and we found it extremely successful. It's so easy to use. It can be done on a daily basis. And it, once a month, they will tell you what the reconciliation might be. Or you can have a rolling total. So this, you know, someone's in front and someone's behind and they can spend more money on their credit card or whatever. So we found it takes all the pressure off about who's paying for what, and thoroughly recommend it.
So, David, is this just for things like coffees and lunches out, or is it the bills?
Lunches out, dinners, shopping, expenses like, for example, electricity bills, you know, everything, fuel. We share a lot of things, but we don't necessarily share personal items or whatever, and our finances don't go into one big kitty. We keep separate finances. We're not married, but we, you know, we're effectively a married couple in many ways, but we like to keep separate finances.
You're a very modern couple, David.
Well, thank you. But, obviously, if there are financial issues in a relationship, it does create a lot of tension. And and not everybody has the same, you know, values in terms of, you know, how they spend money. Fortunately, we're very similar, but notwithstanding, we like to share the expenses that we share fairly. But others, we take privately. You know, so I might buy something for my partner if it's one of her private expenses. This system allows very easily just to click on a button and say, okay, that's she'll pay for that, and even though I'm paying for it, it'll become out of her share, so to speak. So it's very easy to use. Thoroughly recommended.
David, thanks so much for explaining that to us. I had not heard of those ones before, and I'm wondering if there's other strategies that I have not been exposed to yet. Perhaps you've got one that works in your partnership, or you could tell us about the time when money did become an issue in your relationship and how it played out for you. You can also send a message via our Facebook page or go to the Life Matters website and click on Contact Us to send us an email. Rosemary in Ballarat has texted in, "We give each other a monthly allowance to spend as we like. We've done this for 30 years and it works beautifully." I'm wondering if they have a kind of shared everything, but then you have your monthly allowance as well. That sounds like an ideal system. Catherine, let's go back a couple of steps and talk about some of those underlying things that affect couples about money. What is a money story?
So mostly we grow up getting messages from our parents. So Matt talked earlier about your family of origin. When you're a young person, that really sets your view on many things in life, money included. And often you'll take a central message from that experience. So things like it's good to put money away for a rainy day, or money is the root of all evil, or it's only money, it's there to be spent. And so often that really shapes our philosophy as we move into being adults and then couples. And if those money stories don't align with our partners, again, it's not fatal, but it's really important to understand, partly because you think that that is normal, and sometimes you can't even imagine that someone has a different money story because it's so fundamental to your existence. So I think going back to the first date concept, might not be on the first date, but, you know, a helpful discussion might be, what was money like in your family? What were the messages you took from your parents? What was the phrase or expression they most used? And that'll give you an insight into the sort of approach you have to money.
And Matt, do you also find sometimes in your relationship counselling that people are trying to do the opposite of one or both parents?
Quite often that's what we do find. So as Catherine said, when these money messages, if you like, are very formative and also very resilient, but you may want to do things differently to your family. They're either, very spendthrift and never had any money, and as children you were always going without. Or it might be the other way around. There's huge extravagance and you've got more of a social conscience. Who knows? But, it can go either way. And that can often be a surprise to the other partner. Oh, I thought you grew up in a wealthy family, so money wasn't an issue, whereas in fact it might be. So there's a lot of rich conversations to be had around it.
And Matt, do you think that conflict over money is increasing between couples as the years go on, or is it pretty much how it's always been?
Look, it's hard to say. I'm not sure whether it's increasing or decreasing. It's certainly changing, that's for sure. But even still, we're still hearing remnants of where the male, who's the main breadwinner, taking control of the finances, if you like, and their, I'm assuming, female partner going along with that, albeit leaving themselves a little bit vulnerable later on in life. Perhaps where it does become more of an issue for us, as particularly working in therapy, is the idea of money being a flag for perhaps other deeper struggles in a relationship. And so if we are finding somebody who has a partner who's very controlling around money and their use of money or withholding money, then that really speaks to us that maybe there are other things going on in this relationship that aren't good and that we do need to explore. I guess I'm saying that somebody might being exploited or possibly abused.
And in fact,
so, yeah, it's very rich territory.
And Susan writes on Facebook, "If your attitudes to money are opposed, run a mile. The one who doesn't save doesn't earn and loves to appear generous by spending on the few occasions he has money, and he'll take the conscientious, responsible earner and saver for a ride." And that sounds like it's written from bitter experience, Susan. Catherine, I'm wondering how much more of a role debt plays these days. Do people come to you more to address that?
Yeah, so one of the worrying trends trends is that over-indebtedness is increasing. So the Australian Bureau of Statistics' most recent measure was that about 30% of households are over-indebted, which of course causes problems because it means you don't have a pool of savings that you can rely on, and mostly the things you want become difficult to obtain.
What's the definition of over-indebted?
So usually it's more than three times, so debt that's more than three times your disposable income, or a loan that's more than 75% of the value of the asset that's securing the debt. And so the interesting thing about that, though, is actually high income earning households are more likely to be over indebted. So again, this speaks to it's not just having more money. And in fact, Australia is a very wealthy nation. When you look at Australia, by most measures, we're one of the most wealthy nations in the world. So it's not absence of money. It's a feeling of control. And it's also a feeling of self-efficacy. So that feeling that if I do something, I will be able to achieve my goals. And so I think debt is a very important part of the conversation that should be happening earlier in a relationship around what are the sort of things that we both prioritise and how we're going to fund that. You know, the other thing is if you're not having a good conversation about money, then you might find a whole range of very negative financial outcomes if that relationship then fails, either because you split up or indeed if one of you passes away and leaves you with a huge debt for which you are responsible and not the same level of income to be able to service it.
And when should you talk about that? I'm guessing the first date would be a real mood killer there.
Well, I think often the purchase of a home is the trigger. So it's not unusual for couples to buy a home before they get married. And certainly for my own husband and myself, you know, it precipitated a whole range of discussions when we bought a home well before we were married. So I think that's a very effective time because you'll need to have conversations about, do we want a family? What will we do if one of us is not earning during that period of time? What sort of education do we want for kids? All of those sort of things cascade from there. But the sooner the better.
And on Facebook, Gabrielle has written, what I've learnt is that if there's enough to go around, things are no problem. Now we have less cash, we had difficulties until we opened separate bank accounts. All bills are paid 50-50 first and an amount is deducted for living expenses. Then whatever's left in each of our accounts, we do whatever we want.
Look, I think that it shines a light on the health of having an agreement. So you've had a discussion, you've agreed on a strategy, it works for both of you. But over time, some of the people who've had most challenges around money are actually people who have a lot of it. And sometimes having a lot of money allows issues to go unresolved because there's not a visible flashpoint. In one particular circumstance, there was a woman that came to see us who had been given shares by her employer when that company listed on the Australian Stock Exchange. She never told her husband about it. The few hundred dollars worth of shares became hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of shares. And it really became a point of tension because she'd never had a conversation, and there was a whole lot of suspicion. There was a whole lot of assumptions she was working on that her husband wasn't privy to. So I agree that, yes, when money is tight, it can cause issues. But in some ways, that forces you to the table to really work together.
Well, on the topic of not sharing, Matt, do you find with your work with couples that that is more common these days?
Not sharing?
Not sharing accounts.
Exactly. I think what we are seeing is what the previous example was, is that we now have couples that are sharing a pool and then also having their own individual discretionary spending. We're seeing that much more and more. And, you know, I guess if we're looking at tips and hints for couples going forward, that might be something that people want to consider more and more.
So if you have separate accounts though, Matt, does that contribute to a sense that it's none of the partner's business where your money goes, which could complicate things? As Catherine mentioned, for example, if you have a family and one of you suddenly not bringing in an income anymore.
Well, of course, it's the circumstances around not bringing the income in that would be the marker there. But, relationships aren't based entirely on having clear knowledge of what your other partner is doing. We go into a relationship and develop hopefully, huge amounts of trust. And so you would hope that some of those things or that would come into play when understanding that your partner has a separate bank account and probably a couple of separate friends, separate interests, as well as the things that you do share. It's interesting, there is some recent research about that's come out that revealed that there are, a third of their survey were that one part of the couple was dipping into their partner's, basically stealing their money. And so there was a shock horror about what's going on here. But once you understand the context in which those sorts of things might be occurring, then it can perhaps add a different flavour of different understanding to what's really going on.
And Catherine, Matt, go on.
Well, I was just going to say, if somebody's needing money to survive, then perhaps their only resort is to steal or take their partner's money so that they can buy food for the children. I'm thinking the worst possible scenario here, or something even more drastic. I guess my point is that money is part of the picture, but there's a whole lot of other things that inform what's happening with a couple when it comes to money.
Catherine, after those initial conversations, you know, let's talk about our values around money, what are some practical steps that you might recommend?
Going back to David's point, actually budgeting is really helpful. And mostly people think about budgeting as unpleasant and being forced to do something we don't want to do. But actually, if you use effective budgeting tools and look at it in terms of it really is goal setting, and each time you spend less than whatever your budget is in a certain area, it's a cause for celebration. Now, clearly, you know, don't go out and spend all your savings celebrating, but if you can find ways as a couple to celebrate success, what that does is that it helps to respect and validate what your partner's spending priorities are, because I think that can be very corrosive, where we form a view that one person's spending is better than the others.
And one is less valid.
Correct. And so technology is very helpful there. And really putting yourself in a situation where you feel like you're moving forward. And so I think that feeling of progress is the other thing that, you know, budgeting can be a gift for.
And just quickly, Matt, what's your top tip for balancing the romantic and the pragmatic?
As I said before, I think start the conversation sooner rather than later. And of course, in our experience, couples always leave everything too late before they seek help. But again, it's around locating those, as Catherine said, those shared and common aspirations, if you like, what you both want to achieve. And of course, celebrating those. I think that's fair. It helps build intimacy and closeness. The more you realise that both of you are working toward the same end. So I think they're perhaps the top two at least.
Have a chocolate truffle together and not some expensive champagne. I like it. Thank you both so much for coming on Life Matters today.